You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
At home and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me as always is
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan Riddell, it is good to be back. We said at the last episode that we did, which was our interview with Garrett Wong, which was completely awesome, that the next show was going to be a surprise, and it turned out the surprise was we weren't going to do a show! Oops! Now, we didn't intend for that to happen. Well, you know, that stupid virus among the crewmen got around, and you had to be quarantined in sickbay for a few days. Unfortunately, as always, doctor came through for you, but for a while, you were under doctor's orders for no podcasting.
If you guys listen to my other show, Nerd Nuptial, on the Nerd Party Network, we actually made an announcement where we realized the show was going to be late, but it just felt like such garbage that we recorded it like on my phone. We were in bed and I just turned on the recording on my phone and like we just made a quick 2-minute announcement that the show was going to be late because we were traveling and I was sick, and I just uploaded it to the service right from my phone. And it was I sounded really pathetic, and I just didn't want to subject you guys to my patheticness.
Well, that was very kind of you, and I'm glad you're feeling better. You definitely sound better.
Thank you.
Well, now that we are back, we have a real episode in store for you, and we are going to do something that has always garnered a lot of feedback, and we've always had a lot of fun doing this, and we're going to revisit the Voyager Mirror Universe.
That's right, and that's the Mirror Universe that we created specifically for Voyager, because devotees will remember that there was no Mirror Universe for Voyager on screen.
That's right, which is why there is such an outcry for it, I think, just about everywhere else. And so this week, what we're going to do is we're not only just going to do the Voyager Mirror Universe and write an episode, but we're going to do another thing that we love, and we're going to write it on the fly in the writer's room with the whiteboard. I just cleaned it off. Squeaky, squeaky, squeaky. And it's absolutely blank. We're going to have to fill this thing up because I really hate staring at a blank whiteboard. And that's what we're going to do. Now, for a quick recap, it's been a long time since we've done a Mirror Universe episode, so I figured it would be good to refresh us as well as our listeners what has happened in our Mirror Universe up to this point. So, first time we did it, we established just kind of the basics. What is Voyager like? Yes, it is still getting home. That is his primary mission. Then we moved on to a rewrite, essentially, of the 37s with the Mirror Universe characters, where we developed Harry Kim as a power-hungry Frank Underwood type who is just waiting to make his move and seize power that he feels he is entitled to, essentially. Mm-hmm. Then last time, we did a Janeway story, and it was also a Will They or Won't They Get Home episode that dealt with alien technology, and chances were very iffy as to whether it was going to help or not, and there were questions about whether Janeway was going to steal it or not. She plays with Chakotay's emotions, and if you don't remember from there, you're going to have to go back and listen.
That's right. I think we have a lot of fun doing these episodes. It's a lot of fun to play with these characters in a twisted, unique, evil way, because you know you don't really get to normally do that, and you get to do that in spades in the Mirror Universe. And so yeah, we definitely recommend guys going back going and taking a look at our back catalog and finding out our Mirror Universe episodes. If you go to trek.fm/to the journey, you will be able to find all of these episodes, and you can go to our full episode directory. And Char actually made a very handy-dandy episode guide that divides it by subject matter, and you can scroll down and find it for Mirror Universe episodes.
Yes, and in fact, I'll even do you a bigger solid than that. I will tell you which episodes it is.
Ooh.
So, yeah, how about that? Because I have the list right in front of me, so it's kind of convenient. So first one is episode 114 titled ISS Intrepid. Then we have episode 119 titled Servitude. Then the last one we did was episode 146, Black Lace Nighty.
We named it Black Lace Nighty?
Yeah, that's what we called it, Black Lace Nighty.
I need to go back and listen to that again because I don't know why, but I just can't remember a lot of that episode. So let's hope that I can remember this episode.
Well, we're going to make it up right now. So if you can't remember it 5 seconds after you've said something, there's just no hope for you, my dear.
And that's right, folks, is that we are not kidding. We are making this up completely on the fly as we speak. Shar, you and I have not discussed any ideas.
Nothing.
We have not pitched anything to each other. I haven't even really thought about anything. That's kind of the beauty of it, because there's no preparation for these episodes, so we just turn on the mic and see what happens.
And we love doing this because we love to bounce ideas back and forth off of one another, and I feel like we're good collaborators. We take absolutely nothing, like you're saying, no preparation whatsoever. I have no ideas where we're going to take this at all either. I have put zero thought into it. I've been doing other things with my day. And by the end of this, though, we've got to churn something out. And so instead of research and prepping beforehand like we would do for a lot of other podcasts, it's more we've got to really put our brain power into it right now. It's a different shift in energy. But I think we do this because I think it works and it's a lot of fun. And at the end of it, I'm impressed with us. Like, hey, we came up with this and it's not half bad.
Yeah. If you're listening, future Star Trek writers of the writer's room.
Yeah, if you're looking for a little bit of help, we know a couple people.
I didn't know old lady Shar was paying us a visit. Like, oh,
tell us, Sonny Jim, if you need us to write you a fan script.
Yeah, my grandkids, boy, they write a good story. Aching hips.
All right, well, so the whiteboard is erased. Yeah, enough of that. The whiteboard is erased. And it's all good, and so let's go now.
All right, let's do this. Step one is always, when and whom is the main focus? I figure we always, until we've met, I think, almost a full rotation, we ought to focus on somebody we haven't focused on before yet.
Do you know the first person that comes to mind? Now, obviously, you're going to make fun of me because this is the first person that comes to my brain, but I have good reasoning because I think it would be interesting if we did a B'Elanna episode.
Okay, yeah, no surprise, but we have not focused on her yet, and we've given this character a really interesting dimension where she has a very good bond with Tuvok.
The way that I had it in my head when we were coming up with the ideas is that Tuvok practically raised B'Elanna.
That's right. Yeah, she did, and he's sort of her guardian, caretaker, mentor, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, what happened was is that, you know, as we all know in the Mirror Universe, the Klingons and the Terrans don't get along, and especially in a post-Deep Space Nine world. And so I believe what we said was B'Elanna's mom was a high-level official or something like that, or the dad was a high-level official. One of her parents was a high-level official, had an affair with the other species, had to keep it secret, had to give up the child, and I can't remember if we killed him off or they just had to give up the child, and the child was raised in the Resistance by Tuvok.
Yes. I don't know if we killed anybody off. I don't remember that part, but I do believe that B'Elanna's mom, Maral, she was the high-ranking official, and because it was so taboo, that's why she gave up her daughter. Yes.
Okay. And so Tuvok raised her in the Resistance, and then, boom, they got flung all the way over to the Delta Quadrant. And people do not like B'Elanna. Because of prejudice, because of racism.
Right.
And speciesism.
Yeah.
And I think that is ripe with potential for story and drama and conflict and everything like that. So do you agree with me? Do you think B'Elanna would be a nice choice?
Absolutely. Why not? If we weren't doing that this week, we were going to do this in a future installment. So why don't we just take on this now? Why not?
Well, when would be, I mean, our second episode was the 37s, and that's in season 2?
Yeah, very start of season 2, and in our Janeway-centric episode, which was the last Mirror Universe episode we did, That was taking place right around the Tuvix/Resolutions area, so we basically jumped to the end of season two. So that's where we're at right now.
Okay, well let's do season three then. Do the beginning of season three. What was going on around the beginning of season three?
Season three, we had episodes like The Shoot, The Swarm, a lot of the titles. We had Sacred Ground, which has absolutely nothing. The B'Elanna story I remember is, it's called Remember, where the memories of Karenna inhabit B'Elanna. And it's a genocide story.
This was also the season with the Q and the Gray and Macrocosm, right? And Warlord.
Yes. That's, I think, a little bit further down, but yes. Also Future's End and fun stuff like that.
Okay, so yeah, if we start at the beginning, we have Basics, Flashback, The Shoot, The Swarm, and False Prophets. And Remember, like you said. So now we don't have to rewrite any of these episodes, but this is just to get in your heads, people, you know, like when the timeline is, you know, like what era, what region of space they would be in at this time.
Yeah, and these episodes do not spawn off any particular inspiration, to be quite honest. That's not helping me at all. How about you?
No, I don't think so. But one thing that could be interesting is a B'Elanna suitor interaction.
Ooh.
Now, we never talked about suitor.
That would be interesting, because, well, and these two, we never really saw them interact, did we? Not that much.
No, not really. And, like, we'd have to figure out who suitor is. This is the mirror universe.
Yeah.
So, is suitor still a killer? Is suitor still the bad guy? Or is he just revered in the Resistance because he's so ruthless? Instead of him having to hide his violent tendencies, does he just let loose and so he's like highly decorated?
Yeah, I mean, this is the mirror universe. A Betazoid serial killer might not be such a bad thing.
Yeah. And to have on your side.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's more of he is revered and praised for his ability to be ruthless and kill whoever stands in his path. I'm sure that's very advantageous to the right people.
And what if he was super pissed because he was supposed to be the one in line to be the chief engineer?
Even ahead of somebody like Joe Carey? Because Suter was a lower grade dude.
Yeah, but he's revered. He's high level.
Not as an engineer, though, but as a killer.
That's true. Okay. All right. You convinced me.
Yeah, I don't know. I get the angle, but I don't completely agree with it. Although I do think maybe because there is such a sense of entitlement among those in the mirror universe, there is something we can use to work off of that.
We can go in a different direction.
I don't know. Maybe is Suter going to kill Joe Carey to take his position and gain a little bit more power?
Well, did we make B'Elanna chief, right?
Yes,
like
we
in
did
the mirror universe,
through a lot of convincing via Chakotay, if I'm recalling.
Tuvok had to convince everybody to give her a chance, and just because of her sheer genius shone through.
Right, not Chakotay, Tuvok. What am I thinking?
That's in the Prime universe.
My brain, it gets so confused with all these timelines anymore.
Yeah, we got the JJ-verse, the Mirror Universe, the Prime Universe, and let's not even talk about TNG parallels, okay?
I know, that makes my mind want to implode, just the initial thought.
Okay, so we don't have to make this a suitor rise to power episode. This could be B'Elanna trying to, I mean, it's year three, it's the beginning of year three, so it's been 2 years in the Delta Quadrant, and maybe she's still having issues with the crew. Like, the crew still doesn't trust her. She's still having a hard time running engineering, and maybe Janeway is thinking about taking it away from her because she cannot control her own team. And maybe Suter is the one who is kind of like the most outspoken person who believes that B'Elanna is not the right person for the job.
Right, and maybe he's shamelessly self-promoting himself, saying, look, I could do a much better job than any of these other schmucks. Just watch
me.
Yeah,
like, if I was in control, none of this would happen, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think we could give him a little bit of arrogance because it's the mirror universe. But
yeah,
that's not going to happen. He is far too low ranking to go from lowly, I don't know, is he an ensign or a lieutenant? I don't remember.
Well, I mean, in this one, this universe, we can make him whatever we want. And
okay, ensign suitor then.
So I like your idea of him being down on the food chain, low on the food chain. So what if we did this? What if we combined our ideas here, where B'Elanna is at risk of having her position taken away, and there are people underneath her. Joe Carey's underneath her. There's maybe one other, like maybe there's like three people underneath her, and then Suter. And all of a sudden, all these people start dying in accidents.
Okay.
And it looks like it's B'Elanna's incompetence that is killing
these crew
members.
I like it. He's framing her.
Yeah, and then we find out that it's actually Suter who is trying to rise up the ranks, and like he's killing off the people above him while at the same time casting doubt on B'Elanna.
I like it. And because he is a serial killer, he is a mastermind at making this look accidental and making it look like B'Elanna Torres is the real culprit, not him.
Right.
But deep down, I forgive me, I love serial killer profiles and that sort of a thing. Deep down, a lot of times, it's an uncontrollable thing, and they're either ashamed or they don't understand why they do it. It's just a compulsion, and then once it's over, what have I done?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of envision Suter in that sense, where there is a little bit, like, you can feel a little bit of sympathy for him when he explains this part of it, where it's almost like when he comes to the next day and he can't believe what he just did yet again. He thought maybe, just maybe, on Voyager, because up to this point, he's not killed anybody. He thought maybe he had it under control this time. And then something, it was like a light switch. It just went off and the serial killer is back.
I feel like that might be too close to the original storyline. I feel like that is that episode of Suter, because that's pretty much the story of Suter. I feel like we should kind of go in the opposite direction, and where, because if he's revered for his violence, if he's revered for his savagery, you know, like he would, he would embrace that because that's what gives him power. That's what gives himself the position. There's no shame in this universe. There's no shame for a murderous rampage.
You are right about that.
And also, like, it would take away from the conniving and the brilliance if he's feeling guilty about it the entire time.
Maybe so. Yeah, I suppose in this universe, he needs to maybe just threaten people a lot more. People walk on eggshells around him because if they wrong him, they know they're dead.
Yeah. Right, right.
But for whatever reason, he has not killed in a good while. I want to put, maybe we do it that way, where he's been somehow behaving himself, in part because people are walking eggshells around him, but then also he just, something just has not triggered him to do it in a little bit.
Okay.
But he is volatile, and everybody knows it. But he can't be so volatile that he is killing people left and right all the time anymore, or else there'd be a plot to get him. You know what I mean?
Well, I think the thing is that he cannot be killing crew members and getting away with it. I don't think that would ever work on the ship. I feel like, you know, like when they were in the Alpha Quadrant and he was, you know, killing Klingons and killing Cardassians and non-Terrans and non-Beta Zeds and everything like that. Oh, that's another thing. He's a Beta Zed. He's a Betazoid.
Yes.
And so he's an alien in the crew. What's his story? Like, why is he there and why is he being put up with? Because the Terran Empire is so closely related to Beta Zed that maybe they're just kind of lumped in together. You know, like they were just as persecuted as humans, and
I would say so. That makes enough sense to me. Yeah. I mean, they're, I don't know. Yeah. Let's just go with that.
Let's just go with that. Like the Betazoids are their brothers in arms. They help them through the resistance. You know, maybe let's just phrase it that way, where like they're one of those aliens where they're actually okay with them. You know, like they don't love, you know, like it's still a point of contention, you know, just like how we have different races and sometimes we get along, sometimes we don't. but you know, it's not all out war all the time. So that's Suter's story, and that's the Betazoid story. So I don't think he can just kill randomly on the ship or anything like that. I think the thing is, and this might blend a little bit better with what you're saying, is that, you know, during the resistance fighting, you know, killing Cardassians, killing Klingons and everything like that, he just was just crazy. Okay, he was the guy with the hatchet that was just insane doing guerrilla warfare. And so he was revered for his savagery in that realm. And then when he was on the ship, and he had to be on the ship, and they had to be orderly to get home, he was just so cooped up. And so whenever there was an away mission, he would always volunteer and just go crazy whenever violence was needed on an away mission. And that was his outlet. But then that wasn't enough anymore of an outlet, uh-huh. because they started having fewer and fewer away missions, or maybe there was a long strip and he just thought maybe he could kill two birds with one stone by, he's like, I could get my bloodlust out. At the same time, I can rise up the ranks.
There you go. Yeah. And like a craving, he's got to do something. Yeah. He's got to fulfill this somehow, because it's only going to get worse if he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Exactly. I like that. Yeah. Okay. That's a really good, concise way of melding both of these ideas that we had going on.
Now, we've established who the Suter character is, and we've established the storyline. We now need to go back and talk about B'Elanna and talk about how the episodes are going to progress. So, like, we know we have a basic outline. We have a basic idea. But now let's develop the plot. Let's develop the beats.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, so B'Elanna is being framed for these murders, and it's looking worse and worse for her with each occurrence. How is she handling this?
Maybe the first occurrence is, maybe that's the teaser of the episode, where they're at warp, and then everybody's cruising along, everything's fine, and then all of a sudden there's an explosion in engineering. You know, like, you're like, cool it, Link. Do a barrel roll. And like, everybody's running around. There's steam for some reason, even though we're on a starship, you know, and it's like everyone's trying to fix it. And like, maybe the captain, like before all this happened, captain said, like, did you do that diagnostic? She's like, yeah, I totally did that diagnostic. Stop asking. And then once they drop out of warp, the ship is barreling around, just going, oh God.
Kind of like flail arms.
Yeah, flail, like a Muppet. Just
yeah, exactly. I'm picturing the Kermit flail.gif. Yeah.
And so once it all calms down, they realize that there is one person dead, and it's someone in between Suter and B'Elanna in the rankings. And then we have the opening music, and we come back. And the captain says, listen, if you did that level 5 diagnostic on the blankety blank like I asked, none of this would have happened. Why didn't you obey my command? And she's like, I promise I did, you know. And maybe that's the first inkling that something's going to happen.
Okay.
To her command.
So is B'Elanna in hot water starting at that point? Or is there a little bit maybe we should put before, where maybe, I don't know, Janeway and Tuvok or Janeway and Chakotay are talking about B'Elanna's poor performance. She's just not living up. She's not doing her job properly. Yada, yada, yada. Rah, 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 rah.
No, that could be good. We could open up on the bridge or open up in the ready room. And it's Chakotay.
That's kind of what I was thinking. And then lead to the explosion. That's the end of the teasers. Ooh, somebody's dead. And then we cut to that following scene where, what the hell, B'Elanna? What the hell?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And maybe that's where Janeway says, okay, from here on out, you are on report. Any more, you know, foul-ups and, you know, like, you're out of there. Like, we don't need you. Well, but the thing is, though, this isn't just her losing her command. They'll maroon her.
Of course, because it's the Mirror Universe.
Because it's the Mirror Universe.
Yeah. What are they going to do? Let her sit in her quarters for the rest of the trip? Absolutely not.
No,
I like it.
They'll be like, she's gone. And so that brings Tuvok in, where maybe that, okay, so maybe B'Elanna is out. Like, B'Elanna walks out of the ready room, and then Janeway calls in Tuvok because he's the one who's ultimately responsible for B'Elanna, and says, like, and, you know, he's the one who vouched for her. And so, like, Janeway and Tuvok go at it, where like Jane was just screaming at Tuvok saying like a person is dead because of your recommendation. You know, if I went with Carrie or went with whomever, or even this person who died, you know, like none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
And then maybe that's when it comes out that she says that, and she's like, I'm not just going to demote her, I'm going to maroon her.
Okay, I think we can be more concise about it. We don't need Janeway dressing down Tuvok. Maybe we cut to a scene later where Tuvok catches up with B'Elanna and we find all of this information out, and he's to check up on her and see how she's handling it. And of course
that's
she's distraught,
better.
And of course she is pissed, and she is breaking objects in her quarters, and she's making her neighbor mad because they just hear things breaking against the wall constantly, and they're like, hey, knock it off over there. There's only so many replicator rations. Something like
really,
that.
I really wish that we could have a holodeck scene in this, but we can't because the ship doesn't have any holodecks.
No.
And
we're screwed there.
Like, oh, okay. All right, here we go. We'll meet halfway. Okay, so... So it's not a holodeck, but it's a training room. Like it's a rec room. Okay. It's where people work out. And
yeah. And she's punching the bejesus out of something.
That's not much better than what you were about to say.
yeah, it is. Come on.
okay. So yeah, she's like, I don't know if she like has a blade, like a sword, like a Klingon sword or,
Batleth.
There is a Klingon sword, okay? It's not just...
Yeah,
they have
okay,
more than just a batlist.
Okay, fine. Be different.
They, like, maybe she's just, like, going crazy. Like, maybe they have, like, these drone-type things where she can practice her fighting skills. So it's not a holodeck, but it's not just a dummy. Like, it's something a little bit more advanced than that. It is the 24th century.
Kind of like a mechanical trainer?
Yeah, like a mechanical trainer, but, like, something really rudimentary. Something really basic. It's not, like, Data, you know, like, hanging out with you. You know, it's...
No.
It's a glorified punching bag.
Yeah, that talks back. Ooh, that was good.
Yeah.
Nice punch.
And let's say, like, that's where we see Suter for the first time in the episode.
Okay.
And he's working out just as furiously as B'Elanna is, but we know why B'Elanna is angry, and we figure, and, like, maybe we go over to Suter, and we try to figure out why he's so angry. And that's where they interact. And he says, he's like, yeah, I come here every day. I fight every day. You know, like, I try to destroy these drones every day, but it's just not enough. And he says, he's like, is this enough for you? And
I like it.
You know, like, they have that conversation. So we find out more about Suter's character, like, where, you know, like, B'Elanna and Suter can have that conversation. And it's totally, we can have that expositional conversation where he says, he's like, I haven't had a good fight since we were on Katarkin 3, you know, 3 months ago or something like that.
Right, yeah. I'm itching to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to make sure it's not you yet.
Yet. And
he's not saying that, but...
Yeah, and we don't lead on to the fact that he gets a promotion until the second kill.
Where it's beyond a coincidence. Sure.
Yeah, where it's like, where maybe it's still kind of a coincidence.
Well, it's going to look that way, but two people in the same department?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, two people in the same department, but it's got to be B'Elanna, right? It's got to be because she screws up.
It's got to be something she did, because she's the head of the department, and ultimately, therefore, she is the one who is going to be held responsible.
We can make him two-faced, where he is... So when he talks to B'Elanna in this workout room... He says, he's like, listen, he's like, we aliens need to stick together. You know, I completely support you in being the chief engineer. I'm here if you need anything. You know, like, he's just like, he's just really like, he's crazy. He's volatile. But he like, he gives us the sense that he respects B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And her genius. But then we cut to the next scene and Suter is totally bashing and making up lies about B'Elanna, about how she cannot handle this. She doesn't deserve to be in power.
Maybe he's talking even with, I don't know, Joe Carey.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, like, okay, so who is he talking to? I think he needs to talk to someone a little bit higher up, someone we know a little bit better. Like, who is he talking to? Who is he trash-talking in this next scene?
Is he maybe talking to Harry, and is he one of Harry's allies?
I don't know if Harry's high up enough.
He's a senior officer.
He is a senior officer, but...
Who else would he go to? Tom Paris?
I like this idea, but I don't think this should be something that's revealed at the very end of the episode, where we find out that Harry was pulling the strings the entire time, where Harry was the one who told Suter to do this.
Ooh, that is wicked. I like it.
And it's part of Harry's plan to get more of his own people in positions of power.
Right, so the easier to control the ship, my dear. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Oh, that's really freaking good. Okay.
But I don't think we should find that out until the very end of the episode. So that's why I don't think we should talk to Harry.
You're right. That's absolutely got to be a surprise. So in that sense, then, we need to figure out who would be high up enough, who is also, I don't know, potentially at least willing to go along with Harry if and when he rises to power, because he's going to be talking only among friends.
Well, it can't be Tuvok for obvious reasons.
No, and it can't be Chakotay.
Okay, why can't it be Chakotay?
Well, why would Chakotay respect Harry's rise to power? Absolutely not. He's going to do everything to stop him.
No, I thought we were talking about Suter. Like, who is Suter going to have this conversation with?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, but isn't Suter going to talk with somebody who supports Harry because Suter is one of Harry's minions?
This is Suter trying to damage B'Elanna's position. This is not Suter going to recruit more people.
Okay, so he's just playing around, is it?
He's just playing. He's playing
all right.
Either
side. I was
side.
Thinking
he's,
too linearly. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then I guess in that sense, then Chakotay is the prime candidate because he is the first officer.
Right.
Even in the Mirror Universe, he's still kind of the HR of Voyager. If there's a crew issue, he's the one you talk to.
Okay, so Suter is talking with Chakotay. What is he saying?
He's saying just about the opposite that he said to B'Elanna, to her face, where she's incompetent, she does not know how to do her job, she doesn't ever run any of the proper protocols, everything is just loosey-goosey, the ship is falling apart by the second, every minute she spends in there, the place is just destroyed just a little bit more. She puts on a good front, but deep down she knows she can't handle it, and it's becoming more and more obvious in her work with each passing day, and the rest of the engineering staff is just incredibly frustrated by the fact that she was the one who was elected to head up engineering when it's absolutely in disarray, and it's to everybody's detriment that she's there.
Yeah, and then Chakotay has no choice but to report this to the captain.
Of course.
If it's something this detrimental, she has to go to Janeway, but he doesn't necessarily have to say it was Suter. You know, like, he can say, like, a crewman came to me and told me about this with B'Elanna. You know, there are concerns, and Janeway's like, well, let's just get rid of her right now. And Chakotay's like, it's, you know, like, we have to play this out. You know, like, we don't want to ruffle too many feathers. Yeah.
You've only heard a little bit of the story. And although he has taken these concerns to heart, it is but one complaint and it's only one point of view. So maybe do they start a little bit of an investigation then, where maybe they're going to talk with more people in engineering about B'Elanna, trying to get more to the real heart of the matter and find the truth?
I think that could be something, but we also need to make sure, like, we need to make sure that there's focus on B'Elanna. We need to make sure that we focus on her doing stuff. Like, so, like, what if, you know, okay, maybe let's combine the two, like, from B'Elanna's point of view. What if, like, she got called, like, she's investigating in engineering on what she, like, she's trying to figure out what went wrong. You know, like, she is analyzing, going over logs, trying to figure out, and she just cannot figure it out. Where, you know, like, the diagnostic worked, but it didn't pick up what it was supposed to pick up. How is that possible? It's not possible to do it on its own. And then maybe that's when Chakotay comes in and starts asking her all these questions that she doesn't have answers to.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, I like that. It just, what happened makes absolutely no sense. There's no reason why in the world any of that should have happened. She has no answers and it looks bad for her. But at the same time, that's not proving her guilt.
Right. That's the thing. It's very elusive. You know, like, it could have been a computer malfunction. It could have been this. It could have been that. It's no guarantee that it's on B'Elanna. Now, I have an idea for the second killing.
Okay. And I think we're right about at that point.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it should be two people who die this time.
Whoa.
I think it should be a transporter accident.
Okay.
That where B'Elanna was supposed to be on the pad to go down with these two other people. But then she had to run away at the last second to go because she forgot something or, you know, something went wrong in engineering. And there was a transporter accident and those two people died. And those were two people on her engineering team. And between Suter and her.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that, and again, that looks really bad. Like, why did she bail at the last minute? What in the world?
Yeah, they not only think, like, oh, she's incompetent, they think, oh my god, she's trying to take out her own team.
Right. Which is going to lead to an interesting problem long term, which mm-hmm. is, who in the world is going to be staffed in engineering at this point when so many people are getting killed off? Oh my god, okay. Completely off track here, but I feel like we need to address this situation because I don't know if we ever did. One important person who was a part of engineering that we've not even brought up with at this point is Seska.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I believe somebody wrote in or commented on Babel Conference or something asking us to address Seska. What if she never left the ship and she's still there? What if Seska called B'Elanna out from the transporter room and at the last minute? And then we can focus on Seska at a completely different time, but just establish that she is still there. And maybe she's still a Bajoran at this point. Or has she been uncovered as a Cardassian, and how's that working?
Yeah, I think that's something that we can tie into later.
Absolutely. This is not the focus of this story.
But I want to see Seska as the nicest person ever. I want to see her. I want to see Seska as like someone who you want to be your friend, where she just looks completely out of place in this mirror universe, where she's calm and gentle. And so no one gives her any mind.
Why would she be on this ship then? I mean, really, what is she doing there?
Because I believe that because she is a spy and she was initially supposed to be a spy to get inner information back. Like, say, let's say it's the same thing where like it's. She is spying on the resistance instead of, you know, the Maquis, which is just a different type of resistance.
Yeah.
She is now trapped in the Delta Quadrant, so she's trying to make the best of a bad situation. But she is a subdued character because she tries to stay in the background. Because if people think about her, if people address her, then that could shine the light on her a great deal more. So like if she's a loud character, if she's volatile, if she's all over the place, more people are going to pay attention to her, more people are going to look into her backstory. But if she's just a wallflower, she can hide in plain sight.
You're absolutely right. That's an interesting way for the character to operate, and it does make sense in the Amira universe instance, because the Seska we knew in the Prime universe was so, not in your face, but as calculating as she was still very forward and very impulsive. Whereas this Seska is a little more thoughtful, a little more quiet, and a little more planned out. She's only going to make her move after a lot of contemplation, and she's going to work very quietly in the background to make that happen. She's very strategic.
What if she's the one who tells B'Elanna that it's Suter the whole time? Gives her some clues or something.
What if she reveals to everyone somehow that Suter, like, she's going to uncover the mystery, she's going to reveal that Suter is the killer and clears B'Elanna's name. Like, at the end, somehow she's going to spoil it all. She'll tell everybody everything.
I think we can serve both masters here, where I think the Seska that we just created just now would want to stay in the shadows, would not want the spotlight, but wants Suter exposed because she maybe somehow Suter, like, all these people dying is hurting Seska's access to material, and so she would not want to be the person to spotlight saying, pointing the finger at Suter and saying, everybody look at me and listen to me, you know, like, it's Suter.
No, not like that. No, that's not what I was implying at all, but more
okay.
I do like your idea though, where if it's going to create enough of an imbalance of her own power, everybody is so power hungry and egocentric in the mirror universe that this is when she has to act, but she's going to do it in a subtle way.
Yes, I agree. I think now is the time. And I think what she does is that she gives B'Elanna clues. Like, she points B'Elanna in the right direction where B'Elanna finds Suter out. And then maybe, like, after that happens, B'Elanna finds out that it was Seska, who helped her out. And maybe she confronts Seska and says, like, how did you know this? How do you have the security codes for this information to find Suter out? And that's where Seska just lies her way out of it. And that's when we know that there's something more to the Seska character, because she knows more than she should, because she's a low level whatever.
Okay, that's interesting. And another thought is maybe Seska knew of Suter's plans for the transporter accident, and that is why she called B'Elanna away. To protect B'Elanna's life.
That's a good idea.
But she can't give away anything further at that point. She just had to act.
That's good. I like that. Yeah.
Just throw that out there.
Yeah, she's the one who called B'Elanna back, but she couldn't stop the entire process, but she could save B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And maybe she says, like, okay, you're going to owe me one in the future.
Maybe. And it's going to sound really weird at that time.
It's going to sound really weird, but then it's all going to come together later on when we establish the Seska. Like, maybe when Seska's found out, that's how she still survives, is because B'Elanna owes her one.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's in the future.
So is it safe to say that B'Elanna and Seska are still friends in this universe?
Yes.
At this point?
I think so too.
Okay. Just want to get that out there too. Okay.
Okay, so what's the final confrontation between B'Elanna and Suter?
That is a good question.
I think what happens is that with these two officers dead, that's when Janeway's just like, okay, that's it. That's enough. We're marooning you and we're throwing you in the agony booth. So do they have an agonizing booth? Like, do they have an agony booth like they did in the original series?
Maybe they should. I don't know if they do or not, to be honest with
you. I don't know if they do or not either. But I think what happens is like she makes the decision to maroon B'Elanna, and she says, she's like, no, you don't understand. You know, like, it was, you know, it was somebody else, you know, like, it was somebody is setting me up. And maybe she doesn't know who. Maybe Seska just tells B'Elanna, somebody is setting you up. You know, like, we don't know who exactly. Like, the audience knows, but they
don't know. No. Seska's not said that to her. B'Elanna is just fiercely trying to defend herself, I think, at this point, to Janeway, where, I know this looks bad. Somebody has to be setting me up. I don't know who and I don't know why, but you've got to believe me. Ask Tuvok. He'll tell you the truth about me. And then we need some interjection.
There, like, Janeway needs to send B'Elanna away. Like, where maybe B'Elanna is, you know, like, they do the whole thing where she's handcuffed and there's multiple security guards on the sides of her. The reason being is because they think that Tuvok's going to try to save B'Elanna. And maybe that's when they lock up Tuvok, when they're transporting her, like, when they're taking her from wherever she was, like, from the ready room down to the transporter room and down to the escape pod. They're just going to maroon her on the nearest planetoid. But that's not enough for Suter.
Okay. Ooh, yeah. He's got to finish the job. It's got to be his work.
It's got to be his work. So maybe, like, he's in there. He goes in there and he tells the security guards, I got it from here. You know, like, Janeway ordered me to take care of it.
Yeah. She's my colleague. I'll give her the proper send off.
Right. And so the security guards leave, and maybe he, like, turns down the oxygen in the escape pod or something.
And does Seska stop him?
I think Tuvok stops him.
Okay. So Tuvok has weaseled his way out of whatever circumstances he was supposed to be in.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that's the thing, is that, like, their fears were founded, where maybe we don't see him. We don't see Tuvok being locked up or taken out or anything like that. It's just mentioned, where it's just like Janeway mentions to security, if you see Tuvok, shoot him.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Has he been locked in his quarters or something and he's hacked his way out of that?
Yeah, something like, I don't think we need it. I don't think it needs to get too complicated. It's just Tuvok circumvented the security. He circumvented whatever was in his way and got there in the nick of time. And
okay. And how about, I feel like Seska being the ultimate person to help clear B'Elanna's name, she's got to be there to witness it all. So after Tuvok catches Suter, then I think eventually Seska comes out of the woodwork and says, and I saw everything.
This is the only thing I'm disagreeing with you on in this episode.
Okay, that's fine.
I think we're putting too much emphasis on Seska. I think she needs to be a completely behind-the-scenes character where she just comes in, you know, like, to say, like, to save B'Elanna and say, like, and say, like, you owe me one for saving your life. And then, you know, Balan's like, how did you know? And then she just goes away. That's all that we see her.
Hmm. Okay, well, that's really subtle, but it says enough that she did know everything.
I think that's the thing, is that, like, I think it needs to be subtle. And so, like, it needs to be Tuvok frees her. But I think you're right that somebody else needs to see it to find out. Maybe Chakotay comes in after Tuvok with extra security, and that he turns to security and says, like, what is he doing here? What is Suter doing here? What is mm-hmm. Tuvok doing here? And the security guards are like, well, he said that Janeway said it was cool. And he's like, are you freaking morons?
Yeah. Put on a red shirt and get out of here, you morons.
Yeah, so that shows that Suter lied to the security guards, and Chakotay knows that it's a lie because he knows that Janeway would not tell him that.
Right. I mean, it's such a clear lie. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's it right there.
Okay. I think I can go along with that. A part of me still thinks that Seska could be a part of it, but I also understand why you want it to be subtle. It's just she did kind of sneak her way into this episode and become integral to it. So yeah. I guess that's where my mind just keeps thinking, maybe just a tad more, but I'm absolutely fine with this too. It works.
So then the ending scene is where, like, okay, so we find out that, like, Janeway apologizes to, not really apologizes to B'Elanna because it's the mirror.
Yeah, not really, no. But whatever, you're good.
She's back in her status. She's a little bit more comfortable. Maybe they have a senior staff meeting. Janeway's like, you know, okay, what do we do with Suter now? And Harry raises his hand and says, well, let's just do what we were going to do to B'Elanna. And he says, and she's like, okay. She says, I'll take care of it. And so he takes Suter to the same escape pod. And that's when we find out that Harry has been the one pulling the strings. And he actually ends up killing Suter before he throws him in the escape pod. So that there are
witnesses.
Oh,
is he going to kill him? Ooh.
I think Harry kills Suter because he failed and he doesn't want any witnesses to betray him.
Okay, because you can think of this one of two ways. Yeah, one, he failed. Or does Harry need every last person he can possibly get, knows that Suter still has something in him, and is going to find a way to, I don't know, fake his death or something to keep people on his side with him? I don't know, just a thought to throw out there. It's probably easier to kill him off, to be honest.
I think that's the thing. I think we have a very complicated plot with a lot of different people. I think it would just be easier for him to kill him before he throws him in, and saying, like, listen, there's no, I can't stand failure. You know, like, and then you're done. And then he's just gone.
And then he's out of there. Okay, right. Well, and that's a very mirror universe type of death, so be it. Yeah, okay, cool. And then that's it. That's the episode.
That's it. So what are we going to call it?
Good question. Okay. Something was on the tip of my tongue and then I lost it. Hmm.
What if we just called it Promotion?
The Promotion. That's I could just see that with the Voyager intro, you know, deal with the credits running at the start of, or after the teaser. The Promotion. It's very innocent. Has nothing to do with murder at all.
There we go. That's what we're going to call it.
Okay. So there it is. We have written another Mirror Universe episode. And that's not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's what else is going on around the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
You don't create a better future and then it's just there and it's just stagnant and nothing ever threatens it. Right, that's not reality.
Yeah, you'd end up with Star Trek: The Next Generation if you did that, right? No.
Right. Well, exactly. And I think that's why a lot of people who love The Next Generation don't like Deep Space Nine, because Deep Space Nine challenges that premise.
The Orb.
Maybe later, maybe he could have come back in like season 7, and he was in love with Kira, Odo was in love with Kira, and they could have had an Ambojutsu match to see who would win her heart.
Women at Warp.
Admiral Alan Alda came to visit Captain Coretta Scott King. Meanwhile, Morale Officer Beyonce is trying to deal with her new Weasley sweater. And
they're all partying at the First Contact party. And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have new Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week, and none of it is possible without the help from our folks on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. Consider becoming a monthly subscriber if you haven't done so already. So, we have associate producers especially to thank on this show. They support TTJ as well as the network on a whole, and those lovely people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, and Dante Hopkins. Thanks very much, you guys, for your support. We appreciate it, and we would appreciate it if you are not a subscriber yet and you consider doing so. Now, the other way you can support us is, of course, through iTunes. We do have one new review, 5 stars, from somebody called ComCC. Very simple, straightforward, and Trek-ish. I like it. They say they love the show. So thank you very much for taking the time to give us 5 stars and leave us a review. We appreciate it. What's going on next week? We get to start all over again with the following show. What's it going to be?
Next week, we're doing an idea that was submitted by a listener. That is the top 5 episodes, in our opinion, that outshone their potential. So where you have a pretty basic idea that, you know, like sounds okay on paper, but then boom, it is a fantastic episode, and it's just a well-executed episode and story. But you'll have to tune in next week to find out what that top 5 list is.
That's right. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!